Jeff Norman, the Norman Report.
Good evening, everybody. Jeff Norman, and this is the Norman Report. So we spoke about the Eric Garner incident last week, and I'm still obsessed with this story. And on the phone with me is Jessica Burke, who is the founder of Residents in Distress in New York City, where she is a police watchdog, a gadfly, you might even say. And she keeps them honest, or at least tries to hold them accountable. And she was with us last week. I've invited her to return this week. Good evening, Jessica. I hope you're in a soothing mood. I need to be soothed.
Well, I certainly am, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I mean, this is so disturbing, and not for the reasons that some people might assume. There's unanswered questions that so many people are just simply ignoring, and it's driving me crazy, and I can barely keep up with developments. Today, the head of the police, what is it, the Policemen's Benevolent Association? Is that what PBA stands
right,
for in New York?
The PBA.
The union, basically. Patrick Lynch held a press conference. And why don't we just play that right? We have some footage from today's press conference with Pat Lynch.
Over the weekend, he's now saying he was set up and the cops who arrested him.
We will defend these police officers. We will get experts in the use of force. It was not a chokehold. He was a big man that had to be brought to the ground to be placed under arrest by shorter police officers.
I am concerned that the officers won't get a fair trial, but they're not even getting a fair trial right now in a court of public opinion. Everything's being piled on as to what they did or should have done or couldn't have done. And, you know, no one's allowing the due process to run its course. In general, the Staten Island DA's office has a history of prosecuting cops. So I think everyone's underestimating the district attorney's office right now.
Patrick Lynch oozes absolute, I don't know what the word is. Is he a propagandist? He's just like so ready to defend the police no matter what, which I guess is what he's supposed to do. But I kind of think he has a point here, Jessica. He just comes across as so untrustworthy. And, you know, to hear him say, Eric Garner was taller than they were. It sounds bad, but I really do think he has a point. What's your take on Patrick Lynch in general before we talk about what he said today?
Well, does the phrase psychotic arrogance bode well with you?
That's the name of my new novel, as a matter of fact. Funny you should say that.
Well, in fact, now that this is the first time I've heard that. I've been too busy. I don't know what to tell you. I don't believe that it's the role of the PBA to blindly defend police officers, particularly if they're criminals. I think the role of the PBA is to support its membership and probably focus on whether or not the safety of their officers in making arrests should be a priority for them. I think his point was well taken, that he doesn't want to have the lives of his force endangered by not wanting to, you know,
by tall guys. By tall guys, you got to look out for tall guys.
Well, here's the thing: I'm not sure. I've never really gotten an answer from anyone about this, but I'm not sure why they had to take him to the floor in order to handcuff him. From what I saw watching the video, he wasn't running. He wasn't jumping up and down, flailing wildly. He was basically standing pretty still. I just don't understand why he had to be taken down to the ground
to
be handcuffed.
That's one of the unanswered questions, and that's one of the things that's driving me crazy, because people aren't even talking about that. They're just focused on the chokehold thing. But let's hold off on that for a moment, because I want to focus for just for now on what he said. He said it wasn't a chokehold. Now, the press has been, and I think even if it is a chokehold, the press is wrong to say it is as if it's an undisputed fact. It is not an undisputed fact by definition. It is an accusation. And almost everybody, the press, people talking about it conversationally, anybody I hear referring to it, is saying it like it's some sort of a fact. And that is where I think Lynch might have a point.
We
have a few seconds of the actual video that started this whole controversy, Jessica. I'm sorry that you can't see it, but let's let our viewers
see. I've seen it, Jeff. Yeah. I've seen it repeatedly.
Right. Jenny, give that a play so folks can see it.
Please just leave me alone. I told you the last time. Please just leave me alone.
Hold on.
Don't touch me, please.
Once again, police beating up on people. I love it.
Okay, thanks, Jenny. So the thing is, first of all, at the beginning, when the cop, what's his name, Pantaleano or something, the guy, we'll call him Mr. Chokehold, when he first puts his arm around Eric Garner, it's not even on his neck at that point. It's on the upper part of his chest. Jenny, can you show? We have a still photo of the beginning of the video. If you could show that, Jenny, the folks who are watching online can see that. You see, the hand is on the chest. Okay, so I think that no matter what conclusion we reach, any cop should be held to a more lenient standard when they have to deal with somebody who's resisting, as opposed to dealing with somebody who's perfectly still and compliant. So at that point, it's not on the neck. Now, as the incident unfolds, you see that the arm is clearly wrapped around the neck. But I don't see that he's pressing on the windpipe. Now, I'm not saying he's not pressing on the windpipe, but I don't see that this is evident in the video. Do you, Jessica?
I don't see it. But then again, I've never seen a video of an actual chokehold, so I have nothing to compare it to. But what I wanted to say in answer to the thing you said before you showed the video, which is, first of all, when we have criminals here, when we have mass murderers and rapists and child pedophiles, when they are arrested, they are referred to as alleged rapist. So before they are convicted, in which case they then become rapists. So I don't understand how the guilty, he was pronounced guilty of something when there has yet, first of all, not to be an indictment. There hasn't even been a trial. So it's the court of public opinion.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
It's clearly problematic, but it's the mayor that identified it, I do believe, Bill de Blasio. He's the one that referred to it immediately as a chokehold.
No, but at least he said that it appears to be. So that's not a terrible sin. I'm talking about, people who are stating as though it's a fact, an undisputed fact. If somebody says it looks like it to them, then fine, they're entitled to their opinion. But I want to hear people who are experts say, look, at this particular point in the video, at 203.5 seconds, look, this is why we can conclude it's a chokehold, and have somebody explain that. I haven't heard anybody say anything
with you.
Like that.
Yes. I would like to hear an expert's testimony, but we haven't had the trial yet, much less the indictment. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
From what I can see about Mr. Garner, aside from understanding after he died that he had a number of health problems, I don't know. I'm guessing that if he were arrested and not taken down to the ground with a chokehold and then held in custody for 6 or 7 hours. He very well may have had a heart attack anyway.
Well, who knows?
He didn't look to be in that great health. So I don't think the chokehold should be the major subject. I think really I'm more concerned about whether or not they had the legality to arrest him in the beginning, why they were approaching him.
Yeah, well, so am I, actually. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I just want to deal with this issue first, because that's what Lynch is talking about, and that's what everybody was talking about. And the two issues are tied together, Jessica, because the point is, because the question of whether or not they were authorized to use any force is so important, that is why people should not be obsessed with the chokehold so much. Because for people who want to hold the police accountable, they may be picking the weaker of two issues to bring up. The issue of whether they were authorized to use any... Yeah, and I think they might be setting up a big disappointment, and then everybody's going to blame the jury for not convicting. And maybe right from the beginning, people should be more honest about the evidence being weak. So just bear with me a second, Jessica. We'll get to that. But believe me, that is my number one issue too. So you mentioned, you know, you don't know what a chokehold looks like. We actually have a photo of the police. And this is why the word chokehold is really not adequate the way people are using it, because it implies, and I think a lot of people assume that it's not legal or appropriate to put one's arm around a neck at all. And maybe it shouldn't. I'm not an expert, but what I want to say is that many police departments in this country do use neck restraints, where the arm is wrapped around the suspect's neck, but they aren't supposed to apply pressure to the windpipe. There's supposed to be a bit of a gap between the inside of the arm and the neck. So, Jenny, could you show the photo of a lawful neck restraint that the police use? Okay, so if you look at that, I'm sorry you can't see it, Jessica, but to me, that looks almost the same thing as what the cops did to Eric Garner. And so, great. So we're showing it both right now at the same time. Thanks, Jenny. That's great. And I don't know how people can tell the difference. It's just unbelievable to me. By the way, I want to invite our listeners to call in if they have any questions or complaints or demands. Our number is 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562. And my guest is Jessica Burke, the founder of Residents in Distress, a neighborhood safety group, would you call that, in New York? Is that the right term?
Well, I know. Perhaps when it started, it was initially started because the police were doing a horrible, worthless job in protecting its community members and the business people here. But I quickly elevated the purpose of this organization to publicly criticizing the police. And so it became, while I'm still concerned about neighborhood crime and, drug dealers, the purpose of RID now has basically been to hold the police accountable, since apparently the CCRB has never done that and neither has Internal Affairs.
Well, it might sound to folks who are listening as if we're doing the opposite of holding the police accountable, but really we're not. We're really just trying to impress upon folks the importance of being specific about what the offense was or wasn't. So we're both in agreement here about about the most important issue perhaps being what was it that started this whole incident. And this is another thing that the press is giving very short shrift to. Most of the reports say very casually that he was arrested he was in the process of being arrested because he was suspected of selling cigarettes. And that's as far as it goes. And this drives me crazy because nobody seems to notice the obvious question isn't being addressed, which is, well, suspected for what reason? What's the basis of this suspicion? Did the police, did one of those officers claim to have seen him do it? Did a local merchant do it? I've seen different things mentioned. One article said local merchants complained. And then I've seen others that said one of the cops saw it. But nobody is quoted at all. Am I right, Jessica, to be
well,
on?
Well, yes, of course. I deal with this. I live on Christopher Street, mm-hmm. the center of gay pride, and in Christopher Street Park. Nobody can go in the park because it is laden with drug dealers and pedophiles and people who publicly masturbate, urinate.
Sounds like fun.
Low-level crime. And so we are, of course, frustrated here, and we call the police all the time when we see something. And that is what confuses me about this whole thing, because I'm aware, according to the patrol guide, that a police officer has to directly observe it. He can't be told about a minor offense. And so I don't know either whether or not any one of those arresting officers actually observed it. No one's saying which one of them observed it, which one of them actually placed him under arrest for the alleged activity.
Yeah. I mean, if it were some obscure case that wasn't getting any attention at all, then fine. Then, of course, not every detail is going to get addressed. But this is a case that's getting a massive amount of attention. So you'd think at some point it would occur to a few people that that's kind of a pertinent question. I don't know what's wrong with Earthlings. On the planet where I live, we zero in on things that are pertinent a little quicker than this.
But that's because, unfortunately, this case is now becoming second only to the famous historic Tawana Brawley case, led once again by the irrepressible Al Sharpton, who paralyzed this city a number of years ago by falsely accusing people of rape, and he never did apologize. And so I cannot understand why this has become a racially divisive issue. The mayor held a private roundtable at the mayor's office with Reverend Sharpton and Herbert Daughtry, the reverend, and I guess a councilwoman from that district.
Oh, there was somebody there who wasn't a reverend. They weren't all reverends.
No, there were a couple of people there, but they were all black. It was not racially diverse. And so my impression of what's gone on now is, first of all, a lot of NYPD officers, at least it's been my experience, are somewhat racially insensitive to begin with.
Yeah.
And so what we don't need now is an us and them mentality. I can't understand, quite frankly, why no one is interested in white people when they're abused by the
right.
police, or Asians, or gays, or
well, all right, yeah, but
don't get it.
So yeah, well, to be fair, you know, people of color, you know, historically are targeted more often.
Because they commit more crime in the areas that they are targeted in.
Well, I think that part of the reason is because they may be committing more crimes, but I think part of the reason is some of the cops are racist, but not all of them are. But here's the thing. I'm basically agreeing with you, but let's assume there is there's no way to really quantify this, but let's assume, you know, there was an 80% chance that this was a race-based incident, okay? And that's a pretty high percentage. So let's just assume for the sake of discussion that it's an 80% probability. Well, that's still a 20% probability that it wasn't. So, I mean, so based on even if the odds are that high, why would a responsible person, you know, claim to be 100% sure that it was a race-based incident? I just don't get it. This was the same thing we saw in the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin incident. Sure, there's been a lot of racism historically in Florida, but also people are worried about crime in their neighborhood even when the perpetrators are of other races, too. Yet we had so many people insisting it was because Trayvon Martin was black, like absolutely sure.
Yes, it is very similar, because apparently that was what caused George Zimmerman in the first place to follow him or to call it in, because he observed a black teenager in his neighborhood. Had it been a white teenager, everyone is saying he would not have bothered. I disagree. If someone is wearing a hoodie, and a little bit high and acting suspicious and they don't belong in a gated community, I wouldn't care if they were Chinese. If they don't belong there, I'd be following them as well.
Well, Zimmerman never made an issue of the hoodie, by the way. That was his critics who made an issue out of it. He didn't. He just simply gave a description of what the person was wearing.
True, he did not. But the point is, if for instance, if he were dressed in rabbinical attire, or he was dressed in a white shirt with a peace sign and holding a flower, perhaps his demeanor would not have been as suspicious or thuggish or whatever.
Yeah. And the other thing about that incident, you mentioned Sharpton, he demonstrated once again that he has absolutely no understanding of probable cause, because he was ranting and raving right from the beginning that Zimmerman should be prosecuted because of the dead body that was probable cause. But that's absolutely factually wrong, because and it misstates what the legal inquiry was about. There was no question about whether or not he was killed, no question about who killed him. The whole question was the killing unlawful? And you need some evidence.
I agree with most of what you said, but I disagree very strongly that Al Sharpton is ignorant. He doesn't give a crap, and he rants and raves because that's what he does. Whether it's legal or efficient, he's going to say it.
Well, it could be both. I mean, because a lot of people don't understand what probable cause is. A lot of people thought that just because Trayvon Martin was killed, that in and of itself warrants a prosecution.
Well, you're correct. A lot of people don't. But believe you me, Mr. Sharpton has a number of attorneys advising him. At this point, I'm sure he knows the ins and out of law.
All right. Well, maybe.
He himself is being irresponsible by trying to make a huge issue of this. What he should have merely done is comforted the family, attended the funeral, and prayed for them in a vigil. He should not be urging and ordering the DA and the medical examiner and going to Washington or whatever. He should stay out of it. It's not his job to investigate anything.
And he gives bad advice. He doesn't realize. A lot of people who perceive themselves as defenders of the oppressed actually give bad advice. They were screaming for George Zimmerman to be arrested right away. But if he had been arrested right away, he would have lawyered up, and they would have gotten nothing out of him. They had absolutely no evidence anyway. The little bit of fake evidence, or what passed for evidence, was pretty much just based on what George Zimmerman gave them, because he wasn't arrested. He was the world's most cooperative suspect. I talked to them for hours and hours the night of the incident. And the next day, went out and reenacted it. And that's what they got their so-called case out of. So it actually would not have helped their cause at all if he had been arrested right away. And so now we see a similar thing happening with Garner, where they're demanding that this guy be prosecuted for the chokehold. But it may not be the strongest case that they have. And it might be that they lacked probable cause to use any type of force. So we have...
I agree. But as we discussed previously, I'm more concerned that the medical technicians stood by and did nothing to assist him. That's, to me, much more concerning.
Well, yes and no. It's an egregious, terrible thing, but it's not really a controversy. I mean, I don't hear anybody defending them.
No, it's not a controversy, and so I'm waiting for their indictment immediately, really. Well, or their firing. I don't know what's taking so long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were pretty quickly suspended. The police is real. How the police interact with the people of New York is really the bigger issue, because it's an ongoing thing and it affects a lot of people. The paramedics typically behave themselves and do good work.
Typically, yes. And that's why I'm wondering if my experience has been that the police sort of control the paramedics. I don't know what's going on in that community. I'm not familiar with that community in Staten Island. I don't know. I know a great deal of cops live in Staten Island, so I'm not familiar with where the troublesome areas are. But apparently, the thing about Eric Garner is that he had been arrested a number of times before for selling Lucy's, and so he was a known perpetrator.
Right, which is not probable cause. So let's talk. Right. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, and when we take a break, let's play that video about probable cause. When we come back, Jessica, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the difference between detaining someone for questioning versus arresting someone. And during the break, we're going to play a video, and you can hear the audio, and that's good enough, that describes what probable cause is. Our phone number is 800-893-9562. We'll take a break and come right back.
The United States court system uses the term probable cause to refer to facts or evidence that would make a reasonable person believe that a crime has been committed. Taken from the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, probable cause, simply put, means the reasonable belief that a person has committed a crime. It is a standard by which an officer or law enforcement agent has the grounds to make an arrest, to conduct a valid search of person or property, or to obtain an arrest warrant. Probable cause is what's supposed to protect people from unreasonable search and seizures. Additionally, probable cause is the standard used by a grand jury to determine if they believe a crime has been committed or not.
So, all right, so I just want to say another couple of words about Zimmerman and tie it to the current situation. There was no probable cause to prosecute Zimmerman. You just heard what it is. Basically, it's incriminating evidence. It's a matter of opinion as to how much evidence you need for it to qualify as probable cause, but whatever that amount is, it's got to be more than zero. And there was zero. In fact, he was never even accused of doing a specific act, which, if he did it, would mean that he violated the law he was accused of violating. He was only accused of profiling, following, and confronting Trayvon Martin. Now, profiling, confronting, and following aren't crimes. So basically, Zimmerman should have been able to say in response, you're right, I did all three, but they're not crimes. Bye. We're done. And so it was a big charade. And I was arguing during that whole fiasco that this does not serve the interests of people like Trayvon Martin. And by that, I mean young people of color who get harassed by the police. Because by insisting on prosecuting Zimmerman, people were sending a signal to police and prosecutors that probable cause doesn't matter. If you have a vibe, if you have a sense that someone is guilty, then you can go after them. There's two kinds of probable cause. One has to do with probable cause to make an arrest, and the other is probable cause to prosecute. So they're both equally important. So now let's cut to the situation here, and perhaps Eric Garner and others are getting hassled by the police because so many people sent a signal in response to the Zimmerman-Martin case that, hey, it's okay. Probable cause doesn't mean anything. And once again, nobody's talking about probable cause. And it's the most important thing. So to people who may not grasp where we're coming from, who've been listening to this show so far, I want to make it absolutely clear that the most important thing is to make sure that people who don't deserve it aren't hassled by police or prosecutors. So probable cause is a standard that has to be met in order to make an arrest. Without it, it's not lawful to make the arrest. But, Jessica, if they want to stop you just for questioning, it's a lower standard called reasonable suspicion. What do you know about the difference between the two?
Well, first of all, I still believe, unless someone tells me otherwise and shows me factual evidence, that selling Lucy's is not considered a crime. It is considered a violation, a very low-level minor offense. And because it is not considered a crime, it needs to be witnessed by a police officer, not just, as I said before, reported to or prior had been arrested for it. So in my neighborhood, we have hundreds of people who every day go and do a bunch of things, and the merchants and the neighbors call the police, and no one ever gets arrested. No one even ever gets questioned. They just tell them to move on, and they leave, and they come back 10 minutes later. They never do anything, because my understanding is the police have the discretion to to make an arrest if they don't choose to. If, for instance, Mr. Garner wasn't violently screaming or exposing himself or doing anything other than maybe selling a few Lucy's, nobody made them make the arrest. They could move on and make a more effective arrest of perhaps a drug dealer or a prostitute and have left Mr. Garner alone. They chose to focus on him. I don't believe they focused on him because he was black. I think they focused on him because he was a chronic offender. At least that's what I was told.
Yeah, that's the impression I have too. And you bring up a very valid point, but we aren't in any position to make a judgment about it because we haven't been provided with enough information. I have
Correct.
Not seen what a offense, whether we call it a crime or a violation, or let's put it this way, I have not seen what statute or statutes, plural, the police suspected Garner of violating. So we can't really say, well, that's the kind of offense that the police have to witness. We don't know if the police claim they witnessed it, and we don't know what statute he allegedly violated. We just see these very casual references in the media to selling cigarettes. But I suspect
Right.
there's more than one possible statute that one could be accused of violating related to that, probably having to do with how many cigarettes he has, whether, you know, I'm not even sure, but there very well could be more than one statute that could pertain to
Correct. And he may have been, I don't know where exactly he was, but he may have been trespassing, if you will. He may have been within 5 feet of a business, and that business would have the authority to have him removed. We don't know what else he did.
Yeah, it's all a big secret. And the New York Daily News and WPAX-TV Channel 11 in New York both say that they obtained copies of the police report about this incident, and they both did something absolutely maddening. They published excerpts from the report, but not the entire report. And not only that, they didn't explain why they didn't publish the entire report. And nobody but me, so far as I know, even seems the least bit bothered. Again, this is like screamingly pertinent. But nobody seems to think it's unusual that they have the report but didn't publish it. So presumably in that report are the answer to these questions we're discussing now.
Yes, but perhaps did they obtain the report legally or illegally?
Well, it's unofficially. I mean, in other words, I don't know who committed the violation. They're not
well,
supposed to have.
Whoever gave it to them made them agree not to publish certain facts, perhaps. Well, there was a deal.
Yeah, well but say that. You know, I mean.
They generally don't. They generally don't. But I think you're absolutely right.
It's such elementary stuff, though. I mean, why should it be a big secret, you know, like what statute they think he might have violated? Why should
I do believe that he actually probably didn't violate anything. So I think they're being deliberately mysterious because quite obviously to me, they didn't have any reason to take him down to the ground for whatever it was he was supposedly doing.
Right.
That's not a reason to get violent. You could have just told them to move along and put it back in your pocket and keep moving.
All right.
Police do that all the time.
So we didn't get into my question about the difference between reasonable suspicion, which is the standard for just detaining somebody, versus a probable cause, the standard for making an arrest. And this has to do with the stop and frisk, the famous stop and frisk policy, or the infamous stop and frisk policy in New York, where they don't necessarily arrest people, but they stop and have a bit of a chat. So what's that all about, Jessica?
What's what all about? Stop and frisk has been abolished. What's the question?
Well, what is it? What is the standard? Can you describe the standard for stopping somebody just to ask questions?
A police officer pretty much can do anything he or she wants to in terms of approaching an individual. The difference, though, is the individual does not need to speak to the police officer. Most people don't realize that. Most people don't know that. I myself are constantly being approached and questioned and harassed and insulted And a lot of times, you know, I'll engage them because I'm waiting for them to say or do something that I can report, you know, them for. But most recently, when I'm somewhere with my camera or I'm waiting in front of a public restaurant or something, a police officer will approach me and say, believe it or not, what are you doing here? And my answer is, and why is that your business? And then he said, answer the question. And I'm like, I'm leaving now. Unless you're planning to arrest me, I'm going to leave. And he goes, do not leave. I'm not finished talking to you. And it goes on and on and on. And then normally when that happens, if he tells me not to leave, one can be arrested for disobeying a police officer's order. One can be handcuffed if he's telling you to stay still, because he hasn't yet told you what it is he wants. And if he's telling you to stay still, he can actually handcuff you and probably put you in it, take you down to the floor. And then later he would have to explain what it was he needed to question you
about.
Yeah,
see, that's a real murky area, and I would love to talk to a law professor or an attorney about that to get a little bit more clarity. I appreciate you taking a stab at it. The thing is, we're talking about detaining somebody. Now, the first part that you said, sure, I don't know about everybody, but I understand that, you know, a cop can just start talking to you and ask you questions. But I'm talking about when you're actually detained but not under arrest. And the difference there just seems to be so thin. And I would like a little bit more clarity on what reasonable suspicion is, which is the standard for that has to be met in order to detain somebody.
I don't think there's an actual exact. I think, for instance, if they see you about to get into a car, getting out of a car, mm-hmm. and they perhaps have a report of a stolen car fitting that description, they will walk over to you and ask you, is this your car? You could say, yes, it is, or no, it isn't. And then he'd say, do you mind stepping over normally out of the way to the wall? They do not touch you. They do not physically, you know, handcuff you or grab you. They simply ask you to wait against the wall. The other officer stays with you, and then the first officer will look it up. And sometimes that takes 15 to 20 minutes. The person wants to leave. He can't. He's officially under detention. Sometimes the person becomes loud, angry, and troublesome, in which case he will be handcuffed until the investigation is complete. And quite frequently, they find out the car is not stolen, and they let the person go.
Right. So in the Garner video, we don't see everything. We don't know what happened right before the video started. And there's also an odd jump cut that nobody seems to have noticed, and they're certainly not talking about it. In the video, there's a jump cut.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, right. So I don't know what that's all about. So, but it appears that Garner is just standing there. And so if they want to talk to him, they can talk to him. So I think that these, even though these reports are vague, I think they're probably correct that the cops were in the process of arresting him. They did put handcuffs on him, but the question is why? Amy.
That's correct, and I agree with you. I do not understand why this is not the major focus of the whole thing. Instead, the major focus is this was a black man, and that is why.
Yeah, and it should be no matter what his race is. Why was this guy handcuffed? What authorized
it? Absolutely. And there are many people of all races and colors that get treated very similar. There just doesn't seem to be a public outcry about it.
Right. Now, I got handcuffed when I got arrested for doing a hidden camera prank in Idaho. And I think this is an example of how the police do have discretion to arrest you for something that normally is just a citation. So I don't think that this is an actual violation of the law for them to do that, but it's an eyebrow raiser. Let's say that I did a prank where I posed as the world's most annoying neighbor in Boise, Idaho, a few years ago. It was for a Fox TV special, and one of the neighbors called the cops, and one of them signed a complaint accusing me of disturbing the peace.
Okay.
And so that's the kind of thing, you know, it's like playing your stereo too loud when you're having a party or something like that. That's the kind of thing where you normally issued a citation. But in my case, they handcuffed me and brought me to jail for this thing. So it does happen.
Were you resisting arrest?
No, no. They just decided to handle it that way. And by the way, it's the first time I've ever had handcuffs on, and it hurt. I'm not cut out for
how
this.
How long, may I ask, were you in handcuffs?
They left me in the car for a few. It's so long ago, I forgot. Probably maybe half an hour or so. I was left in the car for about a half an hour, and then it was like a 10-minute drive to jail. And anyway, they were too tight, and I complained about it, and they made them a little less tight. And when they took them off, there was an indentation in my wrist for like a half an inch that stayed there for an hour. So I don't know if that's the type of thing that the police usually do to people or not. I mean, people who are hardened criminals and deal with all kinds of stuff might be laughing at
them. Was it?
Boise, Idaho.
Okay, I don't know what they do in Idaho, but here if you complain, they make them tighter. Yeah. That's what they do here.
Right.
So I myself was detained and arrested a number of times, or detained rather. And in fact, I'm currently hopefully about to settle my third federal lawsuit. And I was handcuffed shackled by my legs for 12 hours. I was not allowed to use the bathroom. I didn't have my phone call. I didn't get any water. And I was threatened with being charged with 100 other extra things if I didn't cooperate and confess immediately. So.
And this was the NYPD did this to you?
This was our darling 6th Precinct, right. I live in the Village, and the 6th Precinct, of course, has targeted me for a number of years because I'm openly critical of them. At any rate,
well, why is it a federal lawsuit? Why is it a federal lawsuit?
Because false arrest is, you have a choice. You can take it to Supreme Court. I choose to go federal.
What do you mean take it to Supreme Court? You can't just go straight to Supreme Court.
No, you have to file within 90 days a notice of claim.
Uh-huh.
And then you have a year and 90 days to pursue that. With federal court, you have 3 years, and you don't have to file a notice.
So anybody who feels that they were abused by the police could file a federal lawsuit as opposed to
Anyone can file a federal lawsuit. And in fact, the federal court in New York in the Southern District has an unbelievably helpful and very nice, comfy pro se office. And, you know, they practically do it all for you. When I was initially doing it, I had to type it up myself and research it. But now they have actual forms. All you need to do is fill in a couple of lines and check every box, and basically, there you do. You have a lawsuit, and normally the city settles minor cases just very quickly. The typical average amount for a minor arrest with no serious injuries is usually $5,000 or $10,000.
I see. So this is your third lawsuit. Were the other two also for false arrest?
The first lawsuit was for I was arrested for completely false allegations by a police officer that I had complained about for four felonies, attempted murder, reckless endangerment. They alleged that I threw a bucket of urine off my terrace on someone and threw a brick at him. I wasn't even home. I was in Westchester. I provided them with a train ticket. It was an unusually weird event, and because I was angry, and that has prompted me to become a public outcry. I was enraged, and I went to a meeting, and the New York Times happened to be there and wrote about me.
By the way, just out of curiosity, if one wants to toss a bucket of urine, How do you get that? Is that something that's available on the streets in New York, or you have to?
Well, I wouldn't know because I didn't. I neither had a bucket nor would I have that much urine that would fill up a bucket.
Please, you don't be so modest.
The whole thing was amusing. No, no, I don't. But however, interestingly enough, the reason that I think those allegations were made in my particular case was that my upstairs neighbor, who was a drug dealer, by the way, had urinated off the balcony on my mother's head for 2 years, and the police did absolutely nothing.
Why all this focus on urine? You mentioned before that there's public urination is a problem on the streets there, too. There's a lot of... here in L.A., we have all sorts of crimes, but it doesn't seem to be nearly as many urine-related incidents.
9 out of 10, from what I could tell, I think I read some figures, 9 out of 10 arrests of a black male, somebody did a study, I don't know whom, is for things in the subway and in parks, public parks that include public urination and or exposing themselves. Now, to me, exposing yourself is a more serious thing, particularly if there's a child near you and you're going over and you're showing yourself. I think that's a low level sexual offense. But if you gotta go, you gotta go.
Well, yeah, there's a thin line between public urination and indecent exposure, right?
Rarely, if the individual is against a wall or in a park and he's urinating. Rarely do they charge him with indecent exposure unless he keeps his organ out and walks around and displays it. It's basically just public urination.
Excellent choice of words. You know, I not to get too gross, but I'm actually serious. I have a hard time even accepting that public urination and also the other one. How do you say that on the radio? You know, making a duty.
Defecation.
Yeah.
Defecation.
I have a hard time accepting that should even be against the law when public facilities aren't provided. I mean, they allow dogs to do it outside. What's a human supposed to do if there's no facilities provided?
Well, that's interesting, Jeff, but believe it or not, here in Greenwich Village and in Chelsea and in the Upper West Side, which is what I'm familiar with, a lot of people have been ticketed and actually arrested for not picking up after their dogs. There's a big minor violation offense with that. If you don't pick up after your dog, that's sort of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I remember years ago, Jimmy Breslin, the great New York City columnist, wrote a column about how dogs make, if I may be so bold, make a sissy all over town, and he hates it.
I loved him. He was great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're a dog lover yourself, but there is a certain arrogance, I think, that dog owners have, that they feel entitled to parade around outdoors on where we all...
I agree, yeah. But I have to tell you, I've had chihuahuas. My dogs do not publicly urinate. My dogs urinate privately on my terrace and on the pee pad. I rarely allow... It's really annoying to me when I see dogs pissing all over the place, you know,
right,
next to a bench while you're eating a bagel. It's offensive to me. And because my dog is so little, when she poops, it's just a tiny little thing, and I just pick it right up. So
I get it. And so when your dog urinates on the balcony, may I just ask, not that I'm making any accusations here, by any chance, is there a bucket around at that time?
No, I don't own a bucket, I swear to God, and I still don't. No, but there is a massive stack of pee pads that I...
If the police were, hypothetically, to see a bucket on your balcony, would that be probable cause to arrest you, or would that be reasonable suspicion?
No, but apparently, when they see me, they don't need probable cause. Just the other day, I went into the precinct to pick up a police report, and the sergeant demanded my phone. And I said, why? And he said, because I said so. And my feeling was that he was going to take out my SD card to get all the photos and videos. And I said, you can't have it. And he said, either give it to me or you'll be arrested. And I said, for what? And he said, for disobeying a police officer. Let's just say that I pressed my instant dial button and got internal affairs on the phone. So as soon as internal affairs answered on my speakerphone, I said, I'm here with Lieutenant Lee, who seems to want my phone. He said, who's this? I said, Jessica. He goes, Jessica Burke? So apparently...
Oh, you're famous.
Apparently, they're so familiar with my many calls. The lieutenant said, okay, next time, though, don't come in here with your camera.
You're on their bucket list, I think, is what it is.
Definitely, yes. I'm white, so, you know,
You are the white Erica Garner. Do you weigh 400 pounds also?
No, but here's the thing, Jeffrey. If I were even slightly of color, even Hispanic or Oriental, they would never get away with this. The fact that I'm white, there's no Al Sharpton defending me. Nobody is marching on the precinct.
There's no white version of Al Sharpton. Well, there's a job opening. What about what about Randy Credico? Isn't he?
Randy Credico is actually in the gubernatorial primary, which is on September 9th. He's running against Andrew Cuomo. He's extremely interested in justice and an anti-police crusader. However, he's mostly concerned, like most very liberal people, with only black people.
He's only concerned with black people.
A lot of white
people are like that too. You know what it is. I think they people have low self-esteem, and they need to seize on something to make themselves seem superior. So race is just a very easy thing to do. So they're just ready to call somebody else a racist. So that's their way of saying, well, by contrast, I'm not a racist. And it just sets themselves up as a hero.
But here's the thing. Yeah. I don't have any bias whatsoever. If I'm walking down the street at 2 a.m. and I'm on my way to get a soda and somebody screams at me and throws something at my head, it doesn't even occur to me to check to see what color they are. I'm calling 911. The fact that they might be black, immediately then I'd be called a racist. As if a white person's going to throw a can of soda at my head and I'm going to say, oh, that's okay, you're white, I won't call the police on you. I mean, it's bizarre and it's absurd.
Yeah.
And I'm
right.
really
so,
getting...
So so I don't think the police are too kind to white people who resist arrest. So somehow...
I think they're much kinder in general than they are to black people because, as we pointed out, a tremendous majority of cops are racist. I don't want to make a broad generalization,
yeah.
But a lot of cops are Irish, they're Italian. I think in 20 years I met one Jewish cop in the 6th precinct, so they're rare and few and far between. We have 2 black officers. I think there are approximately 185 police officers. 2 are black. So what does that tell you?
I don't know. What does it tell me?
It tells you that that if we have an entire white police force and they are going to, and some of them may be racist or have a racist tendencies, it tells you that it's never going to be equal. For instance, if there are 16 people in Christopher Street Park and 16 of them are publicly drinking, but 14 of them are black and 2 of them are white, and the police officers choose to only arrest the 14 black ones and leave the 2 white ones drinking, what can you really say about that? I mean, the black ones were guilty. The fact that they didn't arrest the 2 white ones drinking, so what? At least they arrested 14 people drinking. I'm not impressed by that. My standard is the person guilty, like you said? Was there probable cause to harass him and arrest him? I don't care what color he is. It doesn't, he or she.
Right.
So I'm on a different level. Someone throws something at my face, I want that person arrested. And as I said before, the police are not saying, as you said, what exactly was the reason. I still don't know, and neither does anyone.
All right, well, let's stay on this. You've been on 2 weeks in a row now, and I want to thank you for joining me for the entire hour. It's not easy to fill up an hour. But,
it certainly isn't.
But you did it, and I appreciate it, Jessica. And
well, you're very welcome, Jeffrey. I wouldn't do it for anyone but you.
Oh, well, good.
You're the only one asking tough questions, and I admire your tenacity.
Thank you. I'm not going to let up. We're going to get to the bottom of this because this says a lot about who we are. Thank you so much, Jessica. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. NormanReport.com is the website. Please visit, and you can find Jessica's Facebook page by searching Residents in Distress on Facebook. Bye-bye.
Jeff Norman, the Norman Report.